So thanks everyone for coming. I'm Babak and I'm here with my co-founders of Brilliant Labs, Raj and Ben, and also our head of marketing, Sam. Raj handles all of our hardware engineering, including platform design. And I know a lot of folks have questions about open source and how to build for Frame and like what you can see in front of the eye and how much leeway you have there. So we're definitely going to dig into that. And then Ben is our head of design. So he looks after everything industrial design, mechanical engineering, really the physicality of the device. So excited to share a bit about how we approach design, some of the trade-offs, the challenges, the ethos. And then we've compiled a lot of questions over the last few days. Like understandably, folks have so many questions and we've just been losing sleep, inundated with all of these awesome questions. So we're excited to go through those. Sam's compiled a whole list from across like Discord and Twitter and Instagram, and we're going to work through those as well. Maybe at the top, I'll just start. I'll give you guys just like a brief introduction here. We're Brilliant Labs. We make hardware at the intersection of artificial intelligence and AR. We believe that the future interface is going to be bringing generative AI in front of the human eye. We believe that'll be an incredible amplification of our mental and biological powers as a species. And so we're like at the beginning of this journey. I think the whole industry is. And we see this really exciting open lane to begin sprinting with Frame and whatever comes beyond that. It's all open. And that's not by coincidence. That's a very deliberate decision on our part. We think that wearable hardware in front of the eyes, and we think that artificial intelligence, powerful generative AI, is just too important for it to be developed in a black box and offered by a couple people somewhere to the rest of humanity. We think it's important for everyone to grapple with it, to understand it, to sink their teeth into it, and frankly, build cool stuff on top of it for others to benefit from hardware to firmware to software, and as much of the AI side as we can. We're really committed to being open all up and down the stack. So that's a very deliberate decision, and we're excited to talk more about that. Now, I'll turn it over to Raj, who can give you guys a little bit of a deep dive, or maybe just a teaser, I don't know, in terms of Frame's hardware architecture and like why we decided to go this direction with it, maybe even some of the trade-offs. And then, yeah, Raj, you can talk a little bit about like developing for Frame as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. So yeah, so great to see so many people here. And a lot of questions been coming in. And so many old Monocle folks who have seen what we've done before being excited about Frame. So it's really cool to see these guys and all of you following along for the journey. And yeah, I can give you a little bit of background about what we were thinking when we designed Frame and why we designed the hardware in the way we did. One of the things we really wanted to do is make Frame look really good and just like a completely ordinary pair of glasses that you wouldn't even think twice about just putting it on in the morning and going outside and wearing it in your day-to-day life. And Babak and Ben can perhaps talk about that a little bit more on the design side later on. But of course, the big constraint there was the size of the electronics that goes into the device. We were really down there and trying to find the smallest components we can, tightest board layout we can. And that's where we had to make, in a way, a lot of compromises. They were all for really good reasons to get this form factor. And this is one of the things where we think it sets us apart from a lot of the bigger companies making AR devices at the moment. They have this problem of no matter what kind of device they make, they have to port so many of their apps and existing ecosystem to that device, whereas we really have a blank slate. So having low power hardware that's designed to do a very specific thing, these kinds of generative AI applications, it's perfect for that. And we have a lot of space there to work with. Yeah, the hardware contains a controller, quite powerful microcontroller from Nordic. It's a Bluetooth enabled device. And there is an FPGA as well. And that is a device that lets us accelerate the camera and the graphics. So it's a sort of two-processor design. And so the device itself has a display screen that you see, a floating display, a camera that can see out into the world. And that camera is specifically designed for AI. So it's not necessarily designed to take pictures of things. You've got your phone for that. We all have phones that we carry around every day, amazing cameras that are really powerful. But this is for seeing exactly what you're seeing in the moment when you need it, specifically for AI. And there's a microphone as well that can hear your voice. And so you can tap on Frame, ask it a question. It goes up to the different AI services and prints out a response on the screen. And there's also an IMU, an accelerometer and a compass that we hope people will be able to design some cool stuff with. And then on the software side, the device is running Lua. We decide to mix it up a little bit this time. So for folks who previously watched us make Monocle and maybe have a Monocle, Monocle used MicroPython. And this time we decide we change it up a little and try something new. The concept of how Frame will be used, how developers can actually make apps for it, you can think about it as a remote, like a small remote computer. It's just like how you connect to a server over the internet. You see a console, and then you can type in commands in the console and the server does something. Frame is the same, and Monocle was also the same. You have this remote console over Bluetooth and you can give it commands and it will do something. For example, it can print text on the screen. It can take a picture from the camera and return it back over Bluetooth. It can record audio, and all these things are designed to be interacted with very simple API. And all of this will be documented on our documentation pages. And we chose Lua in this particular time because it's a very easy language to implement on the hardware itself. We really wanted to get something up and running really quickly so we could start building apps really quick and actually getting the product out really fast. And in the perfect world, we'd love to support everything. It's one of those things that we've been thinking about. Do we want to support other languages, Python? But this time we decided to start with Lua and let it grow from there. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things to come, and we'll be documenting it all on the paid documentation pages in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I wanted to just give Raj a quick shout out, everyone, because he is in Stockholm and it's 3 or 4 a.m. for him. Big shout out to Raj. A lot of folks, I think, have been curious about specifically, how do I display something? How do I reconfigure what I see? Can I see this? Can I see that? Graphics, vectors, polygons, let alone text size, text color. So Raj, maybe you want to speak a little bit to that, like how people play with the blank canvas of a Frame.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, as I mentioned before, Frame is designed to have a really straightforward API across all of the devices, all of the hardware that it contains. But specifically on the graphics, there's a simple API for drawing text, putting in different place on the screen, having it different colors, and drawing shapes and graphics, and also displaying images and sprites. So right now, some people have asked about things like language support and stuff like this. Frame actually has no restriction on what it can print in terms of characters. It's all about what fonts you load on there. And the user will be able to load any font package they want, the only limitation being how much memory the device has and how many characters you can fit in there. But by default, we support pretty much all of the Latin character set. So that covers most European languages, and it can just be extended from there. To draw text, as simple as writing just one line of Lua, frame.display.text, open quotes, hello world quotes, and a coordinate where you want it on the screen, and it will print that text. And you can have multiple things on the screen at the same time. You can layer them up, and there's a command that actually prints everything in one. So that way there's no kind of screen tearing or anything like that. It gives you get like a nice, smooth graphical experience there.
And I think something that it might be interesting to speak to is how light, how quick it feels to develop for Frame. That like you could literally be wearing Frame, walking down the sidewalk and bang out a couple lines of code on your phone. And in milliseconds, you'll see that generated right in front of your eyes. So maybe you want to speak a bit to like why that is and what makes that a bit different from other platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. So that really comes back to this idea of having the sort of console over Bluetooth. Typically, these kinds of devices, you have to have like cable, you have to have a programmer of some kind, and you have to tether it to your laptop or something. But because we don't have that restriction, because this is solely based on a Bluetooth connection, and you have this serial interface to the device where you can just type in these Lua strings, you're able to very quickly test and prototype things. Some people have asked about emulators, if we're going to ever release some kind of emulator for Frame. And it's something we've thought about and we'd like to do at some point. But one of the beauties of the way the Frame system is designed is that if you have a pair of frames, if you're wearing it, the best UX and the best experiences is just try it out. It's so fast to develop. You can create a Lua script, upload it, and it instantly starts running. It should be quite a seamless development experience. Folks who have used Monocle, we took a lot of that learning and we improved on that. We tried to make the tools a lot more seamless. We tried to make our own tools and improve all these sort of small things that just comfort features and make the whole end-to-end experience of developing make sense.
Awesome. And now, so I just want to switch gears or switch focus a little bit in terms of this sort of general topic of developing an open source. One layer of this is, of course, the hardware and what you can do on device, what you can show on device. And because we open it up, it means that if you're writing software, you can get as deep into the underlying hardware as you are interested in getting to optimize what you've built for what your user wears or for what you yourself are wearing. But then the other side of this is what's happening up in the cloud. And I think all of us have just been astounded by the last year and a half, 2 years of just this explosion of creativity in the generative AI world. And there's so many, every day there's a new tool. Every day there's a new company. And whether it's on here on Twitter or on LinkedIn or just like wherever we're watching these developments, every day there's some new tool announced that's going to upend someone's job somewhere, like tongue in cheek, right? But it's been crazy to watch. And so finally, we'll have hardware that can interface with all of this rich activity happening up in the cloud in the AI world. And a lot of that is also skewed heavily open source, but either way, there's a variety of APIs you can tap into to mix and match things and hack and create something new on top of what's already been offered. So that's like a bit of a preamble, but Raj, maybe do you want to share a little bit about how we think about that interface and the prospects of developing, not just with the underlying hardware, but also, and perhaps even more excitedly, with what's going on up in the cloud these days?
Absolutely. Yeah, as you said, there's so much moving so quickly and there's so many ways to create these apps. Every day it feels like there's a new tool that you can just download, a YouTube video that shows you, oh, it's so easy to get this model up and running. And it'd be really cool to see how Frame could integrate to all of these creative ways people come up with of using Frame with all of these AI tools. And so we're supporting that in a couple of ways. One is creating different libraries that let you access the wider world via different platforms. So we already have a Python library that's published that you can download that will let you make for Python apps that can work with Frame that run on desktop and laptop. And we'll have Hooft library you can download and design into web pages. You can make Chrome apps, Edge apps, and that will use web Bluetooth to talk to Frame. And then we want to make iOS and Android libraries that quickly let you get up and running to make your own phone app connects to the cloud. And really take it from there. So once we have those bases covered, we can start extending that support up into the cloud and basically following what people ask for, really. So if folks have ideas, if they have things that they want supported, definitely let us know in our Discord and we'd be glad to look into it.
Awesome. By the way, I see that we have a growing number of questions that people are sharing in the comments. We see those. We're going to get to those. And we've got a bunch of questions that we've collated over the last few days that we're going to work through in a little bit as well. So keep popping those questions into the comments there and we're going to get to them. I want to jump over to Ben. Ben, maybe you can talk us through, maybe take us back to the beginning, at the outset of this journey, at the origin of it all, when we thought, hey, what if we were crazy enough to do glasses and all the unknowns and all the new learning? And I think that'd be an interesting place to start.
Yeah, I think so. I guess Raj mentioned it right in the beginning, that our principal aim, our philosophy around the design was to create something that looked like a pair of glasses and didn't look like a pair of AR glasses. I think that was our one main goal for the whole project. And I'll split it into two parts, I think. I'm going to talk a little bit about Prism first, because that's like the foundation for the whole frame and for Monocle as well. And then I'll talk more about the sort of idea in general. But if we go back to Prism, we look at some of you guys is probably familiar with Monocle.
Yeah.
Prism is a combiner prism. It has a curved spherical surface at the bottom and a beam splitter. And that collects the light from the OLEDs and reflects it towards your pupil so you can see the projection in front of you. Now, one of the issues with Monocle, or one of the things we wanted to improve, was the thickness of the prism. It's 9 millimeters on Monocle. And so what we did was we worked with a optical systems agency that specializes in trying to create optical solutions for companies. And what they did was they were able to redesign the way our prism worked and reduce it from 9 millimeters down to 6 millimeters. And that was a tremendous achievement. Most times, from our experience working with optics, is if you try to improve one parameter, it's a massive trade-off on some other parameters, but they were able to reduce the size to 6 millimeters and still maintain the same FOV and still the same iBox and keep the picture quality the same. That was a tremendous achievement. And what that did was that gave us this opportunity then, because then we thought at 6mm, we can make something that would feasibly fit into a pair of frames. So from that stage, we moved on to an ID iteration. And I guess the focus point of the frames would be the round shape, the cylindrical shape of the frames themselves. And that kind of has always been part of our design philosophy, right back to Monocle. We had that circle shape for Monocle, and we wanted to evolve that into the frames themselves and have it feel a little bit like a brand symbol for us. It also works really well because the prisms are flat. So it's nice to have this circular shape with the flat prisms. It feels a little bit architectural to the overall design itself. And going back to talk about the hardware a little bit, with our decision to try and make these frames look more like a regular pair of glasses meant that we pushed all of the hardware into the nose bridge. So the camera, the FPG chip, all the components, risers, mentioned before, we put them all on one PCB and centered that in the nose bridge on the product itself. And that meant that visually we get these super light floating arms almost on the side, which is really great. And they look very distinct from a regular pair of AR glasses. And that was our main goal. And from then it was more pressure on Rive to reduce all the components to fit everything into the industrial design. We didn't want to be in a position where the hardware components were dictating the design itself. So yeah, there's a lot of pressure on Rive to make that PCB as small as you possibly could so we could fit it all in.
And I want to just double click on that for a second, because we're a very small team. And for those of us on this call who are engaged in the process of product development and design, we all know how frustrating, how exhilarating, but also how frustrating the development process can be. And so there is a lot of internal debate and clash of ideas in a very healthy, creative sense. Raj on the hardware side, Ben on the industrial design side, you would think there would be a tension there. How, maybe each of you can speak to this, in the course of developing Frame, how did you guys navigate that? What was that? Ben, how did you think about how to craft ID in the face of incredible constraints on optics and hardware engineering? And Raj, how did you think about really trying to design hardware that was conforming to overarching industrial design?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my sort of passions is thinking back to the old days of retro game consoles and how they used to cram so much performance in such low power hardware. 8 megahertz, 16 megahertz, these low clock speeds, and they would get so much out of it. How the graphics used to be optimized, the clever little tricks they'd use. I really had that drive to choose the smaller thing with the passion to let's spend the time. Frame's going to live a long time, so we'll spend that time improving and optimizing and refining all the firmware, how it works. As time goes on, the frame experience will get better and better because we have being such a quite a tight piece of hardware. It doesn't use particularly high-end processors or anything like that. It doesn't run Linux or anything like that. But that means we have complete software control. All of the code for Frame, we've either used libraries like Lua. The Lua code base is quite small. A file system, we've used LittleFS, just the general Nordic libraries. But everything else is coded ourselves. So we have full visibility on every bit of code in the whole project. And I think that kind of gives us the ability to go in and optimize everything about it over time.
Yeah, I think that optimization is the key kind of word. I guess two parts, the optimization, this sort of robustness in our approach to remove things that we don't need, that we didn't want, that were just excess, really helped drive the overall design and just being super efficient. So on the sort of the mechanical side, there's very few spare spaces within the body, within the housing of the overall design. Everything is being optimized to the point where it's almost not even there anymore. And anything that we didn't feel was necessary, that we just thought was maybe a burden or maybe even there for some sort of premium feelness or something, we can remove the excess so that we could streamline the whole design itself. I think the arms actually are pretty good example of that, because the arms run down, they taper down to the battery housing, And then we trees kept one on each side, one on each arm. The battery's kept in there. And then we constructed the arms with a two-shot molding process, so that we mold one half of the arm first, and then we layer in a flexible printed circuit, and then over the second part of the arm on top, so it's completely sealed within. And so there's just no wall section or any kind of cavity within those old arms. It's just completely encompasses the flexible printed circuit, which connects the battery to the main board.
Yep. And also all these like small details, I also want to give a shout out to Bobak. I think I find as an engineer, I can really get caught up in the details a bit sometimes and slowly change from this kind of product mindset to this engineering mindset, where the design becomes based on the constraints of how it should work. And slowly the product stops becoming this beautifully crafted thing and starts becoming too much reality. But Bobak's always had this sort of bigger picture vision, the ideal, what this should really look like at the end of the day, and the sort of the craftsmanship of it. And so many times I think you've pointed out, it's like, but can we change that thing? Can we make that bit smaller? Can we make that bit cleaner? And you look at it initially and you're like, maybe, not sure, maybe we can move that. And then there's always a way. And so I think that's a really key part of it, is having someone who always pushes you to find that path that's always there to make it better and better.
Yeah, mutual admiration society here, but that's only possible. Like all of us, I think I've worked on teams where like people are pushing, and because of the culture of the team, because of the way people communicate, it's not possible. And in fact, things can blow up. So it's only possible because Ben and Raj are so diligent in their engineering excellence, but also just open-minded and creative in how they always find another path up the mountain. And I think that's the key, right? Is like, we've always known that this is a shared mission. Like this isn't about one person's idea. That's a petty way to think about things. Right? I think we've always shared that. It's always about what awaits us at the top of the mountain and like, what's the right path up, and being able to navigate that together as a founding team.
Yep. Nelly.
I want to just jump over to Sam. There's so much that we can talk through. And maybe before we do, guys, we've got a Discord for Brilliant Labs. If you're on Discord, we'd love for you to join, ask questions. We're going to be sharing documentation very soon, which lets you dive even deeper and understand Frame and the platform that we've built. And that's a great place for you to interact with the whole team. There's a lot of volume right now, so we're really trying our best to try to keep up with everything, but bear with us. It's been a pretty hectic couple of days. We didn't expect any of this. We were like, hey, we've worked hard on this thing and our mothers still love us, so I'm sure we'll be fine. No matter what people think about it, we'll be okay. And it turns out it's been compelling for a lot of folks. So we've been super gratified to see that. So please join us in Discord. We're going to have regular AMAs there, and that'll be a great opportunity for people to ask questions and get hands-on technical support as we really evolve this platform together as a community. Let me turn it over to Sam. And also just as highlight, again, we do see all the questions that have been asked in the comments here in Spaces as well. And so we're going to get to those.
Hey, everybody. Yeah. So we've had a ton of questions across all different platforms. So we're going to try and address a few here. And let's start out with a really common one for more technical folk. And that's, why the choice to move away from Python? What are the advantages of Lua? And maybe you could just speak about that, Raj, for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so we thought that one might be a little bit of a controversial change, seeing as we built so much on MicroPython. And MicroPython's a really great project. Definitely not that we didn't like it or anything like that. But there's several reasons that we decided to choose Lua for Frame, at least as the first release system for Frame. One, the main reason was it's a very small and lightweight language. And the way it integrates into a project like this is really quick and simple. Python itself is a really good language, really great language, but it lets you do a lot of stuff. Python as a language is evolving quite a lot. But Lua, on the other hand, has stayed the same for quite a while. So it has a lot of limitations. It's a very simple language. It's the sort of language that you could learn in a weekend watching YouTube, whereas Python has so many features. You can do all these different things. But for Frame, we needed something small and fast and robust, but we didn't necessarily need all the bells and whistles that Python brings. And that really let us save on the memory footprint. It helped us increase the speed. And for the sort of apps that people would make on Frame, we felt Lua would make a lot more sense. We saw with Monocle that people are making apps where most of the logic actually happens in the cloud or it happens on the phone. And all that Monocle was really doing was actually running the UI and fairly basic logic. And for this type of stuff, it makes sense to actually have something that's very small so you can actually make the most of the performance that the hardware gives you rather than running into all these bottlenecks. Another of the reasons was that Python as a project is, there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of cool features coming out. But for us as a small team, that also means a fair bit of maintenance. And so having Lua instead means that we can actually focus on building features and adding things quickly rather than having to actually keep up to date with MicroPython, which is what the community would expect if we're using that. So it gave us a little bit of breathing room there.
That's great. Super interesting stuff. So let me switch the topic a little bit now. And we wanted to ask about the control method used on Frame. Does it need a voice command to start everything? Is the tap motion we've seen in some of the videos how it's done? Could you guys speak a little bit on about how it operates and what the basic functionality is?
Frame has, and it's able to sense acceleration, and it's also able to detect taps. So the main gesture that we'll have in Frame is a tap and a double tap. And these can be assigned by the user in their own app to whatever they want. So you can have a tap start recording, you can have a tap take a picture, you can have it do some action on the screen, and you can also do double taps. We do want to add some kind of voice recognition capability in the future, but that's something we're still working on and seeing if it's something we can fit into sort of the main firmware that we'll release. So for now, it'll be taps and double taps. And we found that's quite a convenient UX for just general AI tasks that you're walking around and you tap while you're looking at something and you want to ask a question about it. It's a really good interface. So yeah, you tap the side of your Frame, you ask a question that's recorded by the microphone, sent up to the cloud, and you get a response printed out on the screen. And that'll all be part of our first party Noah app.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds pretty clear. So follow up on that. I'm out somewhere. I've just tapped on my Frame. I've asked my question. The person standing in front of me, are they going to be able to see on my lens what I just asked or what the response from Noah was?
They won't be able to read it. It's a very tiny display. So they would see that. So it is possible when you're looking at someone who's wearing Frame, you can see that there is a small box, a small prism inside, and you can see a slight reflection of something happening on the screen, but you can't see at all what it would be. It's from the outside perspective, it's quite small, but you can definitely see something. From the wearer's perspective, is as if you're holding your phone, maybe arm's length away. And that's the kind of screen that you see.
Got it. And then one question related to that, the brightness of the screen, the color and brightness of the font, the size of that, can that be adjusted in real time or is that adjusted via settings? How does that work?
Yeah, that can be adjusted. There's a feature I've been wanting to add for a while. I haven't gotten around to it yet. And that would be, I think it'd be quite cool to add, is a sort of automatic brightness. There's definitely different levels of brightness that you want when you're outside, when it's a bright day. You want it on full power, basically, compared to when it's dark or it's the middle of the night and you just put your Frame on to check something. You don't want the bright light of the text blinding you. I think it'd be quite nice to have this automatic, but it's also user controllable. At the moment, we'll set it as at some reasonable value. Maybe we'll have an extra bright mode if you're outside in the sun. But that's definitely a feature we could add in the future, some kind of auto brightness. And it would probably use the camera to figure that out.
Yeah, just to jump in, one of the beautiful things about an open, especially hardware platform, is that things like this, even as we're working through a backlog, because there's like a million of little features and stuff like this that we want to get to, but we don't need to be the bottleneck. Mm-hmm. We're a small team working as fast as we can on this stuff, but there are people who are smarter and more talented than us who build this in an all-nighter and share this with the community. So I just want to throw that out there. That's part of the beautiful sort of aspect of having an open hardware platform is that really the community can mature this together, that you don't need to be bottlenecked by a central sort of device manufacturer.
So that leads us up to our next most common question, which is language support. Is Noah multilingual?
Noah is multilingual in that it can understand a lot of languages. the app itself at the moment is designed to respond back in English. If you ask it to translate something to German, for example, it would print that out as in German text. And as I mentioned before, Frame will come with most of the Latin character set built in. So it is capable of printing Latin-based languages. But yeah, it's going to be, initially it's going to be responding in English, simply because most of the AI chat services, OpenAI and all of these guys, that she designed around, they're built around English. They're trained on English text. So that's its first language. But there's a lot of translate capability that it'll have.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, that is such a common question across all, for all of our... So yeah, that's good to hear for everyone, I think. So let's move to a more physical issue now that people are interested in, and that would be the types of prescriptions that are available now. And moving forward, do we have any plans to increase for more extreme prescriptions or stigmatisms and things like that?
Yeah, for sure. I can do that real quick, Ben. So we got off a call with our partner on the prescription side. They're an awesome company in the Netherlands called Adoptics. Encourage you guys to check them out. They're doing some really interesting work at the intersection of prescription lenses and the augmented reality displays. We partnered with Adoptics, and we are, I think, one of the first, if not the first, production grade volume hardware players that they are rolling out their prescription lenses on. So there's like a whole sort of custom material and casting process that they use to make a range of lenses that we then bond into the AR display and send to you from our factory in Singapore. So it's a whole process there. They are rolling out, or I should say expanding, the range of offerings literally month on month. This is a big year for them, as it is for us. So right now we've started with a range that I think captures most folks. It's the median 60% of the bell curve. But man, if there's something that's rang loudly over the last few days from folks in the community, it's that you want your prescription here and that the range we currently offer doesn't quite fit. And we totally hear that. Astigmatism, for example, is a big one. So the good news is the range is increasing, that we've moved from 0.5 to now 0.25 in terms of the step change between the prescription range. You can see that on our website now, so you can start ordering there. And then we're going to soon be offering, on the positive side of that spectrum, that's going to come soon, astigmatism is also going to be supported. We're going to announce that soon. As quickly as we can, Adoptics, our partner, is broadening what they can do in volume. And we are in lockstep with them, broadening that as an offering to you guys, to the community. Over the next few months, you're going to see an expansion of that range.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's a big one for me. I have astigmatism, so I'm excited to get that update. Continuing on that same theme, we had a question regarding what size face do these frames fit? And will there be any adjustable pieces or added things to cover different size nose bridges and that type of thing?
Yeah, I can talk about that. So the sizing of the frame, we will put up on the website the dimensions. So typically glasses are measured with the lens width, the nose bridge width, to the temple length. We can put all that up. If people want it now, the lens diameter is 45 millimeters. The nose bridge is 25. And the temple length is 140 mil. So those are the dimensions. What I'd say in terms of small, medium, large, it sits somewhere between medium, large as a pair of glasses. So if you're used to buying glasses, you might know typically what kind of fits you. The arms are incredibly flexible on this. As I said, there's no components in the arms other than the flexible printed circuit. So they will fit larger faces, and we've tried them on larger faces. So yeah, I hope to see a whole variety of faces wearing these glasses.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's going to be helpful for people to hear. Okay, so let's move on to the next question. So this was a question about the camera. And would it be possible to implement software to be able to stream video from the camera to the internet? And what is the resolution of the camera?
The camera is, the native camera resolution is, it's a 720p camera. It's a bit like a webcam, very tiny little sensor. And it looks out through a pinhole lens. The real of doing video is the Bluetooth connection. So Frame is a Bluetooth-enabled device. It has Bluetooth 5.2, but still the bandwidth of Bluetooth fast enough to transfer video. You can transfer pictures, and the resolution and the compression is adjustable. So based on the quality you want, you can get a couple frames per second. maybe that's good enough. If you really take the resolution down, then you can get a few frames per second. You can do like motion JPEG type stuff, but it's more designed for you to take single captures, send that back, and actually do something with that image. Use that image for some kind of AI task or machine vision task, but not necessarily taking videos.
Got it.
And then, so beyond that, where we've, as you've moved Lua, we were just wondering, because we still have so many people in the group that are Monocle users, will some of the development that's continued on for Frame continue with Monocle? And will Lua be supported on Monocle?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. On a driver level and on sort of an API level, Frame is very similar to Monocle. The way you will actually write your apps for Frame will be very similar to how you write your apps for Monocle. Some of the APIs are exactly the same, in fact. It's just that this language that you use to write it is slightly different. Instead of Python, it's Lua. But the way you structure your applications, all that kind of stuff is the same, except, of course, using some of the Lua things rather than the things you have in Python. So a lot of what we're doing on Frame will feed back into Monocle. There's a whole bunch of features that we want to port over. And actually, a lot of what's gone into Frame has directly come from Monocle. And hence, we've been able to basically develop quite a lot of stuff pretty quickly. And yeah, they'll definitely feed back into each other. It is a really interesting idea to actually also have a Lua port on Monocle. If this is something folks are interested in, again, let us know. The repositories for both Monocle and Frame are open source. There's nothing stopping people to actually give it a go to start something. And we're definitely happy to help out if there's momentum behind it. But yeah, there's, at the end of the day, there's always a lot of things to do. So we try to maximize our time. And but based on what the community asks for, we can definitely add things there.
So that's definitely a hint to join our Discord community, right? All right, let's talk about some of the AI services and some of the questions around that. So one of the questions we got is, will I be required to create an account for all the different AI services, or is it all centralized in one account?
So AI services and like the whole model around that is something that we, and I think many other folks in the industry, or I'll say many other folks that are doing AI hardware are still figuring out. We really do want to learn from how people use it initially. I will say we came into this with an assumption that fewer people would be buying Frame, but it turns out that a lot of people are buying Frame. So we're rethinking the economics there and what kind of pricing we can offer. But out of the box, Frame will be, you'll be able to get up and running using AI services. And that'll range from Perplexity to OpenAI stuff, translation, like all that good stuff right out of the box. You won't have to write a line of code. You just download the Noah app to your phone and you pair Frame with your phone via Bluetooth and you're good to go. Now going forward, if we see that folks are really bumping up against the limits of that free tier, and that's especially with vision related queries, some of the multimodal stuff, GPT-4, and some of the other, we have the reverse image web search. So if people are really hitting those limits, then we'll start to offer a paid tier for power users, basically. It will cost a lot less than what the folks at Humane are offering. We love what they're doing. Of course, I think people were a bit shocked to see what that monthly subscription looks like. It's not gonna cost anything near that. But there will, if people are really power using this, especially with multimodal stuff, there's going to be a little bit of a monthly recurring thing that the people will need to buy into. So I guess maybe to summarize here, out of the box, there is a free tier and there will always be a free tier that will never change. And that gets people up and running. They get to dip their toe in the water and understand what it feels like to do a range of AI queries in front of the human eye, because it's a new sensation for all of us. It's pretty cool. But then if people have that use case and they really want to double down there, maybe they're enterprise developers or users, or maybe they're just individuals who are like, I want to use this every single moment or every single day because I want AI in my life, then you'll be able to buy into a paid tier, which accommodates that. So that's a little explainer in terms of subscriptions and how we think about it. But there's going to be more information, like more specifics around pricing and timelines for that paid tier in a few months from now. But for now, everyone can enjoy a free tier right out of the box.
I can also add to that a little bit. So this Noah app is our first party app, essentially, whereas Frame as a platform is completely open source. So this subscription isn't necessarily tied to Frame as the hardware. It's just tied to the Noah app. but there could be other apps. You could have your own apps. There could be competing apps that do similar things or the same thing. And that the Frame hardware is not limited to Noah in any way. So that will keep completely open still.
Okay, that's interesting stuff. To continue on that theme, there was a partnership with Perplexity I've seen all over socials. Will that limit what other partnerships you'll have in the future or what types of AIs we can use? Could you guys speak on that?
Yeah, we love what they do. They're an awesome team as we've gotten to know them. And I think a lot of us are already familiar with how awesome their product is. And they've got this wildly ambitious vision of becoming the search player of the AI era. So it's been great partnering with them. This definitely doesn't preclude us partnering with other folks. And you'll see more partnership announcements from us over time. The beautiful thing about our model is that we operate more or less agnostic. Actually, there's two aspects of this. We, as like a first party, our ability to partnership and integrate with folks, we're agnostic. Whether it's Perplexity or whether it's OpenAI or someone else, Stability for image generation, we are just excited about that bubbling activity, the innovation happening in the foundation model and generative AI world generally. And our hardware is ready to integrate and bring that in front of your eyes. But the second aspect of this is that it's open. So if you think, let's just run with a hypothesis. Let's say someone's, oh man, like Brilliant did a partnership with company Y. And I think company X is so much better at doing this than company Y. You can just swap out company Y and swap in company X and you're off to the races. Like it's totally open. And in fact, our team is there. Like we're all in Discord. Reach out to us. We want to help you do that. We want to facilitate mixing and matching, hacking and playing with all of this at the intersection of generative AI and hardware. Perplexity, we love what they do. We're super excited. There's going to be a lot more in the future that we announce. And we hope that people who own Frame bring their own sort of party as well to the table. Maybe you've done a fun remix of an open source foundation model, like a multimodal Phi-2. Microsoft's got like Phi-2. I think it's text only for now, but maybe someone's able to do something that wows all of us. And it's 2 billion parameters, lives on my phone, but it's multimodal. Oh my God. We would love it if someone integrated that with Frame and told everyone else. There's just so much possibility here. And like every day, the possibility continues to increase tenfold. So that's really how we think about this.
Great. So that's the right tool for the job. And that's the ethos that we're taking for all of this. That's fantastic. Okay. So let's ask now about battery usage, how long Frame works in a continuous use situation. Say we were using it as a teleprompter. And then as an add-on to that, how Mr. Power works as both a dock and a charging unit.
So we love Mr. Power, and I'm so glad that the internet has come to love Mr. Power, or at least be intrigued by Mr. Power as well. Yeah, we're Mr. Power fans over here. Look, Frame is super light, and because of the way that we've architected it, it is extremely low power, especially relative to some of the other goggles that all of us have seen across the internet in the last decade or so. So there's two little coin cell batteries that sit just behind your ears at the very end of the arm. And together we get around 250 milliamps, somewhere around 250 milliamps between those two coin cell batteries. Now, at continuous use, meaning that a display is on, full brightness, camera's on, capturing stuff, wireless is transferring stuff relentlessly off device over to your phone and back up, like you're just really exercising the device nonstop, you'll get around 3 hours of usage. And so our assumption is that no one is going to use Frame that way. We don't, internally, for like testing, we love playing with Noah and using Frame. We don't use Frame that way. Our assumption, and this is based on internal testing, is that a power user would use Frame for 10 or 20 minutes an hour. And that's like back and forth queries and dialogue, capturing sensitive data, transferring it 10, 20 minutes. So that's like a third of every hour. And if you do the math on that, you get 6-7 hours of continuous usage. And Mr. Power is super light. Fits in your pocket and is there to charge up Frame's batteries in less than an hour. That's how we think about battery life on Frame. And that's for most use cases, not all, we totally recognize that, but for most, that's enough to get you through most of your day.
Awesome. So let's move on to another question, which I think is really relevant today. And that's data storage and where the queries, where the data that the user will be sharing with Noah, where will that be stored? How will it be kept safe? And any way you can expand on that topic?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're not storing any user queries, none of the recordings, none of the images, none of the responses. We don't store any of that. We simply pass it on the AI services to OpenAI, to Perplexity, and then handle the response and send it back to the mobile app for it to display on frame. The only thing we're storing is just token usage, just to keep metrics of how much folks are using the service. And at least for now, that's our plan going forward. We don't have a need or want to store user information. We would like to perhaps actually allow users to have the device learn about them in some way in the future. But we're thinking quite hard about how we can keep this on the users, either on the device itself or on their mobile phone, or in a secure way that it's only accessible to them. And so that's something we feel quite strongly about. And we don't want to use the user's data for anything. We don't really see ourselves as that kind of company. I want to actually exploit anyway.
Yeah, maybe I can just exactly what Raj said, just to really emphasize our ethos around all of this. We have zero need and interest in anyone's data. And we think that honors every single person who uses it. We think that builds trust. Our business model is just not oriented around anything related to your data. And that's a deliberate choice. Just really want to emphasize that, because I think as these technologies become more capable, more intelligent, but also just more pervasively involved in our lives, like we will literally be embodying artificial intelligence through the use of technologies like this. And so we think that keeping the data on your premises or completely within your control is, and that's ethos-wise, that's really important to us. I wouldn't want it any other way for myself or for my family. So we think we should treat our customers the same way.
Yep. And in some ways, our platform goes a step further, because it actually hides, in a way, it's like a VPN of AI. Because from the perspective of the AI, the big AI services, they just see the request coming from Brilliant Labs. They don't see it coming from the individual users. So it all funnels through our servers. It goes out to them and the responses come back and we just send it back to the user.
Yeah, that's great, guys. I think that's the answer all of us are hoping to hear, and especially today with how commoditized our data has become. It's fantastic to hear you guys are thinking about it in that way. So I think we've covered the large majority of user-based questions. Anything else any of you want to add?
Nothing I want to add. And maybe Raj and Ben, you guys have something, but I just want to make sure that we got to a number of these questions that are in the comments here.
Just looking through.
Yeah, let's see. I think a number of these, like we've already spoken to directly or indirectly. Oh, that's interesting. There's one about if the video was broken up into shards like the blockchain.
I was reading that.
Yeah, I that's really interesting.
I don't think we covered speak. There are no physical speakers on. But I've just been asking Raj about linking up to the headphone. Yeah.
That's a quite conscious choice we made when we were designing. So we really figured that we'd add so much bulk putting speakers and it'd affect the battery life so much, trying to actually get that in there. We looked at all kinds of solutions. And we just couldn't. At the end of the day, physics wins. You need that space to create sound. And then suddenly it feels like you're fighting the fact that everyone walks around with headphones. Walks around with AirPods or earbuds, and that's ultimately the better experience. So we didn't feel that we needed to for experiences that actually need audio. Mobile app could just use your regular headphones. So we didn't add that.
Yeah, and that's just to clue people into the roadmap. That's something that we are working on right now. There's a lot of really interesting like generative AI, text-to-speech services out there. Like one that many of us are familiar with is 11 Labs. They do pretty interesting work. And so you can imagine it wouldn't be too far a leap for us to take every text NOAA response and have a very delightful and increasingly human sounding voice speak that back to you in your AirPods or in your earbuds. So there's a discretion there as well. It's not just like the speaker thing that like people can hear when they're close enough to you. What the hell is that? It's actually in your ear. There's discretion. It leverages existing hardware that many of us already own. So that's definitely on our radar, but we just haven't announced that yet.
Quimp, I've lost Bobak.
Second there. It looks like our connection has got a little bad. So how's everyone else? Can we hear clearly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I can hear.
Hey, so one of the questions for Raj here is what kind of out-the-box features are included, or should we consider this as a dev kit?
That's a great question. In a way, there's sort of two ways of thinking about it. Frame itself is a great dev kit for anyone wanting to play around with AR devices like this and get quickly up and running, start building apps and building experiences. The thing we add on top of that is our NoAP. And that is really the consumer product that lets you access all these AI features. So you'll have a bunch of features. You'll have live translation. Frame can hear a whole bunch of different languages and it'll give you translated text on the display. You can ask it ChatGPT type questions. You tap the side of your frame, ask it something, and it'll come back with a response. We have the multimodal as well, where it also uses the image and actually gives you a response based on that. We'll have web searching, also powered by Perplexity, and we'll be building on these. So our aim is to keep adding features to Noah, make it more and more like your own little personal assistant that feels personal, doesn't feel like a faceless AI, and something you can really know in a way and build, have a character almost.
That truly does sound exciting, our own personal her.
So you guys can hear me now?
Yep, we can hear you clear.
Oh, awesome. I was just asking Raj a question that I see in the comments there about adjusting font sizes. Maybe we could expand that to include colors and other things that are displayed in front of the eye. And you said this earlier, but I just think it's something that's on a lot of people's mind.
Absolutely. Yes, the fonts are very customizable. We put a default font set in that should work for most uses, but you can add in your own fonts as you wish. There's just a memory limitation of how many characters you can put in. You can change the sizes, the colors. You could even do things like printing word by word. This would be a great accessibility feature for those who can't read small text. Could be a great feature. And we'd like to try to support all different kinds of different languages if we can. So as we go on, we'll see if we can add these features to Noah and expand from there.
So I see another question here, and that is regarding which eye text is displayed and will text or graphics be displayed in both eyes?
Yep. Just like monocle, frame is monocular. So you see in one eye, you'll see in your right eye. And when you hear that for the first time, maybe it sounds a little strange. Oh, you only see in one eye, do you see it clearly? But it's a surprisingly good effect. It's one of those things that you don't necessarily notice it once you try it. And you're very easily able to focus on what's being printed. So all the graphics, the text, you can move it anywhere around on the display. As I mentioned before, it's like having a phone screen, like the quite large phone screen, about a meter away from you, maybe a little bit less. And it's a fair bit of space for you to play around in. Feels quite spacious. Even though the display itself isn't super high resolution, it's a 640 by 400 pixel display. But with that, you can actually do quite a lot. And so the graphic system we've designed is designed to be very fast, very vibrant. And because you have like nice clean lines on top of transparent background that you can see, it gives quite a cool effect.
Yeah, something I just want to chime in on, because like when I wore monocles, my first time wearing a monocular device, and I was delighted by two things. The first is, like, I think a lot of people in VR, where you're like totally immersed or the super wide field of view, like you have some issues with like dizziness or nausea. With our devices, you have none of that. That's the first thing. And we get asked that sometimes. So I just wanted to offer that first. The second thing is that your brain plays this funny trick on you. Just because something is hanging in front of one eye, it doesn't mean that like only one eye is perceived to see it, if that makes sense. Like your brain kind of tricks you into thinking that both eyes see it, but it just skews a little bit closer to one eye. So that's also really delightful. It doesn't feel like there's this tension because one side's perceiving the image and not the other. To the brain, it's all the same thing. It accommodates that.
Great stuff. So we got another question here that I thought was worth asking. Can frame be used during exercise? Is it waterproof? Is it dustproof? What if I'm a heavy sweater?
Ben, what do you think? It wasn't designed to be waterproof. There's a seal at the top between the rear and the back housing. There's the mic hole. It will be fine in like light drizzle, but it's not certified to be waterproof. And then, it really depends on how sweaty we are talking. I think mild exercise will be totally fine.
Awesome.
And it's something we're testing as well. Like one of the things I'm doing in the lab at the moment is we've just received like a whole bunch of different gold pads. And we're actually seeing how do they behave under different kinds of, with sweat, with like salty water and all this kind of stuff. How do they corrode? Do they leave like the green dot on your forehead, things like that. So we're really trying to select the components that hold up to this kind of stuff. And we wouldn't use things that wouldn't work in this kind of setting. Just like you wear your AirPods, they're not necessarily designed to be used underwater. They're not IP rated. But people wear them out in the rain and then they work fine just because they've been designed in a sensible way. And things like our mic hole, face downwards, water's not going to go inside. And little design choices like this that has made it so they should hold out in most cases.
Cool, cool, cool. That's good to know.
Yeah, and there's maybe one more thing I wanted to add to that, which is like a broader thing that we try to do. We try to, especially for those components, like Raj mentioned, something that might rust, or we really try to pay a lot of attention to that so that you don't get any nasty, whatever, smudged on your forehead or something if you sweat. But what we pay a lot of close attention to is our batteries. They sit very close. They sit alongside like a cheap, low cost. And we work with an amazing company out of Germany called Varta. Shout out to those guys because they do incredible battery technology, really products through the AirPods. Varta batteries, certainly not the cheapest by a factor of 2 or 3, but they are the best, or the most robust and the safest. I wanted to just also throw that out there because it is a little bit of just how we care, like our values on display and how we've designed this device and not just cutting things down on a pure cost basis.
Yeah, we accept a little bit of a weight bump with these guys as well, a few grams.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, we got a question here that I thought was quite interesting. I have little coding experience. I'm curious if these will be difficult for someone like myself to get in a functional state. It's sounding like coding knowledge is required for these.
Yeah. So a little bit of coding knowledge is definitely going to help to get you up and running with Frame. As we mentioned before, there's sort of two ways to look at how you can use Frame. You can either use it from a developer perspective, or you can use it from a consumer perspective with Noah. But for those who want to get up and running with Frame, we'll be releasing tools that you can download and play around with. We hope to make some YouTube tutorials that can teach you how to get up and running with Frame, how to drive the display, how to listen to the microphone, how to take a picture of the camera, and all these kinds of things. And so even for folks with very little coding knowledge, you should be able to get up and running fairly quickly. And then it's really up to your inspiration and your ideas. It's always a case of trying something out, having a play around. And then I always say to people, next thing you know, you'll have a cool app that you've made.
Yeah. And just to clarify that, when Raj, you say get up and running, you mean development for Frame. Yeah. And so it is an important distinction. And maybe this is what the person who asked the question was alluding to. Out of the box, you just put on Frame, pair it to your phone via Bluetooth, and you are up and running using Frame as like a non-technical user. So for a mere mortal, you can be asking GPT questions, taking a photo of your food and asking for a nutritional breakdown, all of that stuff, doing live search of what you imagine with Perplexity. All of that is available without a single line of code. Download the app, pair Frame over Bluetooth, and get out and about in the world.
Fantastic. Yes, I think we can break it down. The Frame is actually going to be something usable without coding knowledge, but if you want to really extend its abilities, coding will be helpful. Let's move on to one more question. Does Frame include convenient utilities like timers and to-do lists? I know a chatbot will sometimes claim to be able to help with these features, but ultimately fails since there's no timer and quickly forgets my lists.
It's a really cool idea. We've thought about a few things like this, especially the to-do list, reminders. And these are things we want to integrate into Noah, deliver in a smarter way. It's still a lot of stuff that will work in progress and will definitely come in time. But the out-of-the-box features will include things like the GPT, a multimodal GPT, search, and translation. Those would be the main features.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. It's good to hear. So I'm looking through the list here. I think we've hit the majority of user questions here. Is there anything you guys are seeing that I'm missing?
There's definitely a lot of questions that have been asked. Hopefully we've spoken to most of them. I think we're running up on an hour and a half here. And at this stage, Raj is pulling an all-nighters.
What a trooper.
What a trooper. That's after, guys, we've all, just to let everyone know, the response to Frame has been so tremendous and so unexpected that we're all running on very little sleep these last few days, just trying to like keep up with everything, smiling while doing it, but just keeping up with everything. It's been awesome. And I want to say big thanks to everyone who's just said so many kind and lovely things. It's been a labor of love. It's not been easy. at times. And for all of us here who are familiar with being a founder or just building a startup from zero to one, it's really hard, especially if you're doing hardware. And really big thanks to all of you who've just said so many kind and encouraging, lovely things to us the last few days. It's really meant a lot. I think we should wrap it there. We're going to have AMAs like on a frequent basis, on a regular basis. And so this is going to be recorded and shared. We'll do another AMA soon. And please keep asking your questions. Join the Discord. We're all in there. And have an awesome rest of your day. Thank you, everyone. This was fantastic.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.